Welcome to the Leaders of Lasting Impact podcast. My name is Matt Pohl, founder of the Rewild Group. We believe that as a fundamental part of the human experience, that work is not only essential, it's valuable, that work matters. That's why we're on a mission to multiply the number of exceptional businesses globally. We want business owners and their employees to thrive at work. Thanks for joining us for another episode where we discuss stories of how leaders are having a lasting impact on small and mid-sized businesses. Welcome to the Leaders of Lasting Impact podcast. I'm Matt Pohl, your host, and I'm really blessed today to have a guest all the way from the other side of the world. It's Mark Patton, and he's sitting over in Korea today. Our afternoon, his morning. So welcome, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me, Matt. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to your audience.
Yeah, no, I was telling you a little bit beforehand about my connection to Korea through my wife, who was born there. How'd you get to Korea? I'm sure everyone's wondering, you know, the connection there.
Well, I've been in Korea since 1996 when I came here on a one-year contract to teach hospitality and tourism courses in English in a Korean university.
Okay.
And that rolled over. It extended. I enjoyed it. They liked me. So that lasted for 5 years. And then once that time ran out, like many foreigners who come here, having fallen in love with the country and the people, I've kept finding other opportunities that eventually led me to be able to set up my own business.
Okay. Well, that's great. So today you do, you work as the prudent manager, you work with businesses. Tell me just a little bit about that.
Well, I started in 2003 with another business partner who brought me on, and we were purely in the training sphere. So it was purely skill training. So presentations, email communication, negotiating, sales. And so we started out with that. And as we continued to work with clients on a longer term, we found out that training is not the end of the service. The training doesn't stick unless there are changes that happen within the organization. And so we started to go deeper into, well, what makes this work? What are the issues that our clients have that makes, you know, makes it more challenging to apply the skills that we're trying to teach them? And so we started to learn to take a more holistic approach to developing the organization, not just the skills of the individual contributors.
Okay. As you're applying these skills, was it primarily out of your own background, or were there other kinds of materials that you're using, or sources, or thought leaders that you relied upon?
Well, I pull in a combination of my own background, education experiences. I did spend some time at a Korean conglomerate, so I know the inner workings. I know the day to day, you know, the 30 day week, the 30 hour day of the Korean employee. So I learned that. But also one of the things that he and I did, and I still continue to do under my own flag, and that is to license and source tools, content, products from other providers globally. Because a lot of our clients just don't have the resources to sign up for a full, for example, a psychometric assessment platform.
Right.
And because they're so small and they only need it, you know, in for the three or four leader manager hires they make a year,
right.
I maintain that and then am licensed to reuse it for them.
Okay. Is your clientele exclusively there in Korea, in Seoul?
No, it's actually a combination of local organizations, but also my real sweet spot is global companies, but they have a small presence in Korea. So they probably have less than 50 employees in Korea.
Okay. And do you go kind of throughout the country down to Busan, or primarily up in the north?
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. I will. I'm very location agnostic, which is a little bit unusual for consultants because consultants tend to not want to leave the comfort of Seoul.
When you think about the clients that you work with, give the audience a little sense of what sizes they are, what industries they're in. It sounds like at least a portion of it is from international companies, multinationals that have a presence there in Seoul. But do you work with independent, locally owned businesses as well?
Yeah, I do work with independently owned businesses. I work with startups in the well in with your stages in the startup and in the ramp up ranges because they're where I can really make some significant impact. I'm very industry agnostic, so it just depends on who's having issues. A lot of times organizational development comes in cycles in terms of who's experiencing regulatory issues will blow over into, okay, we've got to retool some skills or redo a mindset. I'm very active in the merger and acquisition space after the finance people, the accountants and the lawyers leave. They kind of turn over to me to clean up the mess. And so, which is always some of those have been some of my most interesting projects is to come in and to rebuild an organization after it's been bought by its former client. It was a local distributor, and then the company that it was distributing for buys it outright. And so a lot of these dynamics are what influences who works with me. But I've worked across pharma and IT and automotive and nonprofit. I do work for the embassies here because they have the same dynamic of they're a foreign company, so to speak, but with local employees. And so they have a very different issue in that nobody who works for the name your embassy in Korea as a Korean is going to get promoted to the home office ever. That doesn't happen because they're not citizens of that country. And so how do you motivate them? What's their career path? What's their reason to maintain, they're obviously the expert in their position. They've been in it for 20 years. But what is their motivation for staying on and staying motivated and professional and loyal to the company when that's they reached the end of their career path 20 years ago?
No, that's interesting. I'm curious if you can share with the audience maybe some unique characteristics of the Korean economy or the marketplace. If there's anything that you've seen that you think is different maybe from the States or from other points of reference.
Well, as much as Korea is very much a modern economy and is aggressively capitalistic, the culture is still very hierarchical. And they've done everything they can possibly think of to try to kind of divorce themselves from that and say the past is in the past and we don't do that anymore. But the thing that influences that is that every young Korean man goes to military service for 2 years. And I happen to have a nephew who is almost done, and I've watched the difference in his personality and the way he behaves. Of course, I've known him since he was a baby, but seeing him go from college student to now finishing his military service, he grew up and he became very disciplined and much more rigid. And they get in this becomes part of the mindset. And so the promotional track is based on military ranks. And so there's still that influence that is just permeates everything. And no matter how much they get rid of the rank titles and go to just calling each other manager or associate or something like that, as much as they try to get rid of honorifics and language levels in their speech by adopting nicknames that would be in the language of their parent company, You can't train it back out of them. You can't train what they learned in their family. You can't train how they, I've seen college students walk them through interviews, and the interviewer will ask them, how many times a week do you have dinner with your parents? And, family is important. The ancestors are important. Devotion is important. And so the concept of loyalty even is different here. Loyalty implies, and that's why a customer loyalty program, they don't use that word. They term it differently because loyalty implies a willing to sacrifice for who you're expressing loyalty toward. You, if you're loyal to the king, you're loyal to the country, you're willing to lay down your life. That's a very different loyalty than I keep doing business with you because you take care of me and you're a good company. And so a lot of these concepts that we are very familiar with and very comfortable with in the West don't work quite the same way here. And it's always been my mission not to say, this is the Western way, this is the American way, this is the Anglo way, but let's look at what can the best way for you be, understanding basic human psychology, understanding how people work, and not go overboard to try to step on your culture. So integrate the good things about your culture and kind of tamp down the possible side effects in terms of business, and then apply, okay, so and then try to bring in other best practices and match them up to what's possible within the mindset and the culture here.
When you look at the pain points, the challenges that your clients are raising to you, or potential clients are raising to you. If you think about some of the most common areas that you feel like you really add a lot of value, can help organizations overcome or at least mitigate those challenges, what are some of the top two or three challenges that you are looking for in a client that would be a good fit for you?
Well, a few of the things are leaders or managers who are mismatched to their duties. And you have to really pick out what's going on. So there's no blanket, this is always how it works. I had a situation where I was a long-term client I worked with, and they were preparing an employee and spent a lot of effort on her to become the GM. And every time she was given more responsibility, it was a conundrum for management, and especially for management in the home country, in the parent company's headquarters, because she would produce her numbers. She would her work product was excellent, but her relationships with the other managers, and especially the sitting GM and the other leaders who were at the same level as her, continued to get worse. And so it was, what's going on? We went through coaching, and as much as the headquarters kept saying, no, we want her, she makes her numbers, I had to finally say, this is it. This is, we've taken her as far as we can go. And they finally had to basically buy her out, because I kept producing evidence that if you put her in this place, yes, she'll make the numbers until the mutiny happens. And I was able to prove with past behavior and also lots of psychometric data and lots of coaching session data that she's not the fit for that position. Yes, she knows the job, but no, she doesn't know how to do the people side. And so sometimes it's the reverse, but where is the match? Can you train it out? Is it something that is so ingrained into the person that it's not a training issue? That it's something that if they don't recognize and volunteer to change themselves, that it's not going to change. And so those are the kind of things that sometimes it's a little bit heartbreaking, but when it works, and when I have a manager turn around and said, you saved my job, you helped me see why I was struggling with this position. You helped me realize that I had given everything that I could to this company, and I'm a startup guy, or whatever. I think the phrase with that gentleman was, I'm a startup guy. You helped me realize that, and the company is no longer a startup. No wonder I'm bored.
Okay.
And he took off, and he's very successful. We still talk on Facebook. Of course, his headquarters is not too happy because their GM resigned because of me. But the company is still on its success path without him, because he did what he could. And before he started to mess things up because he was bored and he was looking for the startup challenge and all of that kind of rah-rah, you know, that kind of stuff, he's like, no, I need to move on. And everybody was the employees, and he hadn't really started to become an issue, but the employees were like, yeah, it's time for a more of a steady hand.
Right.
Somebody who lets us kind of just do our jobs and isn't constantly over our shoulder and in, you know, doing, you know, trying to do our job with us. And so that when I hear that, when I hear somebody say, you really helped me either save my job or make their next decision, or you gave me tools and practices that have given me confidence in situations where I haven't had confidence in years, that's the real reward for doing this.
Yeah, that's awesome. You talked about some tools that you rely upon. If you could name maybe a few of those that you find have kind of general applicability to some of your clients, what mm-hmm. might those be that you find to be good tools to pull out of your tool bag?
Okay. I don't know if it's okay to name brands.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
I have a good working relationship with Profiles International, and what they provide is several sets of psychometrics, but under the same umbrella, they also have a very robust leadership 360 evaluation. Okay. And so depending on the project and the tenure of the leader in their positions, I usually start with either the personality profile with the job matching capability. So we analyze the job, analyze the person, see where the mismatches are, and then start working on, you know, what can be done.
Right.
And the other one is if it's a tenured leader who's been in the position, you know, 6 months or more, then we'll do the 360 to find out how is your leadership perceived by those around you. And it's all the way around you.
Right.
And then we work on, is it a skill issue? Is it an expression issue? In other words, you have the skill, but you're not very good at letting people know that it's there.
Okay.
We didn't used to call it hybrid when it was just your boss is in France and you work in Korea, but right. that dynamic has always been there in this market to be distributed. And so now it's even more complex because we still have, you know, a third of companies are still letting people work from home in right. Korea. And it becomes much more difficult to show your ability when you never see your colleagues face to face, when there's no incidental water cooler. Hey, let's grab a cup of coffee and have a quick 5-minute meeting, catch up on this. And it becomes more difficult to demonstrate that. And so finding ways for leaders to say, you know, to demonstrate this is a skill I do have becomes more challenging, and something like a 360 will make that glaringly obvious.
Okay. So you mentioned that kind of a job profile that gives you visibility to skill set mm-hmm. and job requirements, where are there gaps. What's another tool that you found to be effective for your clients?
Well, I was really impressed with the model that you use, the 7 stages of growth. I use 2 others that would dovetail with this very well, which I go back to the leadership pipeline as the model, okay. and also the leadership code, which basically is looking at the 4 areas of interest that you have to use to balance your time. So it's a combination of of longitude, where am I in the company over the long term? How am I rising up the ladder? And then as I go up, how do I adjust my effort and time spent on focusing on the managerial duties of managing day-to-day output, my own, my colleagues, my subordinates, and then the longer, how much time and effort do I spend on development of the organization, of my people, and how that adjusts as you rise through the organization? And then there's also the question of, well, what do you do with people who aren't motivated by rising? What do you do with your specialists, your experts who don't want to manage people, but without them, you have no new products. You Right. have no innovation. You have no expertise. You can't let them go. You're going to lose them if you promote them improperly.
Okay. That makes sense. You've already shared a few examples of individuals and their circumstances where your involvement had, you know, important and lasting impact on the organizations, on those individuals. Would you care to share maybe another example where you had a lasting impact on a small or mid-sized business?
Sure. I have he's become a good friend. And in fact, we usually get together a couple of times a year just to catch up on things. And he was an industry hotshot who was recruited from his position as a mid-level manager to head up the local office of a global company. And that was the situation I mentioned briefly, where the headquarters had purchased the distributor. And so they gave the founding CEO of the distributor company a very nice exit package. Thank you for getting our product into the market, for developing the market for 12 years, for growing a company. And since we're purchasing you out, part of the purchase is you're out. And he went away very happy, and that was fine. And then they brought this new gentleman in. Mm-hmm. And my first, I first laid on eyes on him the day that the HR manager, who was not Korean, she was from our neighbor to the east, was in Korea to fire the CFO because the sales manager had been fired and then sued. And then the finance officer was leaking documents to him to support his lawsuit. And they said, you have to fix this situation. We don't understand human resources in Korea. We don't understand Koreans. And we can't afford any more lawsuits. And we know that there's other people who want him out and are probably helping with this effort to take him down. And so you have to make that stop. So I basically sat down as interim HR director for 6 months and pulled in everything I had and coached and so forth. And we managed to there was a law firm handling the lawsuits, but we managed to vet and properly hire a new CFO. So we got that handled. We got a new sales manager in. We reorganized the sales team. The GM's entire issue he had some minor personality traits that we had to kind of smooth because he was sales guy and very dynamic and rough and tumble. And so we had to kind of, you know, get him a little more, I don't want to say nicer, but a little more professional as GM. But his main thing was his vision was to normalize their product offering. They had way too many products for the Korean market. And so their margins were terrible. Okay. And their positioning was terrible. So he's doing that. And nobody wants change. Nobody wants to change the way they work. And so I worked on repairing his organization, managed to use my tools sort of in the evil. I always say this, I kind of used my power for evil that one time by psychologically getting the last holdout to quit voluntarily and not have to fire him. And within 2 years of me finishing the project, they had moved from a small rented office in a suburb to a nice building in Seoul. So they brought the company into town, had better digs, had doubled in size in 3 years, headcount, had tripled their revenue because I helped them eliminate all of the friction and grinding and misunderstanding and resistance to change by introducing ways that you could get transferred, you could grow in the company, you could be rewarded for your effort. And when I and he's moved on, he's had two other jobs since then. The company is still in business, and the my takeaway is that once in a while I do a good enough job that they don't need me anymore. Okay. And so, and that's also very rewarding, because sometimes my wife will be like, how come you aren't working with that company anymore? Because I fixed it. Your car does, you don't take your car back to the shop after it's fixed properly because it's running correctly. So,
well, that's great. That's great. As we kind of head toward wrapping up our conversation today, this has been really good. I'm wondering if there might be something that you would share. I'd ask you kind of a difference in the kind of the business environment. You talked about just the kind of the culture and the hierarchical nature and the within the language with the honor, you know, the honorifics and stuff like that, and how that's almost immovable. But maybe you could share something maybe on the lighter side of something about the Korean culture that you find, you know, is something you cherish that others might not know about Korea.
Well, one of the, I don't hear it as much anymore, but Korea used to be referred to as the miracle on the Han. Mm-hmm. And I have my own personal, I'm married to my second Korean wife. So I'm certainly very brand loyal in that aspect. And I raised my kids here. They're all repatriated back to the States, but they still have memories of living in Korea. But this place is really there's an undauntable spirit here, because if you look at the history of modern Korea, mm-hmm. at the end of the Second World War, Korea had the GDP of the Sudan. And despite having an internecine war that still has not been completely resolved, a third of the total Korean population lives behind the wall in darkness.
Right.
They managed to take a resource poor country with, at the bottom of the economic barrel, one of the smallest economies in the entire world after World War II. And now they're in what are we in the top seven, top nine economies with, some of the best IT. The fastest internet, we make chips, we make everything. Pharma is huge here, and we're into electric vehicles now. We're on the forefront of self-driving, and so it's just in just four generations it's happened.
Yeah.
And there's societal costs to be paid for that. And so life is not, an entirely a bed of roses. We have, I tell people, do you like living in Seoul? I said, I always tell them most of the issues I have living in Seoul are common to any large city. Traffic and, right. congestion and lots of people around and so forth. But Korea has still not lost its can-do spirit. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I respect, and the fact that they've held on to a civilization with their own language, culture, and customs between two very difficult neighbors for 5,000 years, and not been overcome by China or Japan in all of that time, at least not permanently, just shows how tough they really are. And I really appreciate that, because there's a little bit of that, I see that, resembling the culture of my grandparents and my four my ancestors who came to the North American continent and had that same toughness and resilience to carve out a life in the wilderness.
No, that's great. And Like I said, when my wife and I visited Seoul several years ago, I would say the thing that I don't know, I just really loved was just how much the Korean people, I don't know, just believe in their country. They're proud. That's it. It was that they were proud of them, of their people, of their country. And, I've just had a great deal of respect for that. Just like you said, for them to be devastated, not only during World War II, pre-World War II, but then the Korean War that just kind of wiped the map again, and to be where they are here, just a mere 50 years later, or whatever it is just incredible. So, I can see why that really resonates with you. So, well, Mark, my guess is we have some business owners that have heard something from you today that it intrigued them, and I would like them to be able to get a hold of you. And I was wondering what's the best way for somebody who has listened to the podcast to reach out to you?
I think the easiest way, and the way most global companies find me when they need stuff done in Korea, is to go to LinkedIn.
Okay.
And just search for Mark in Korea. I think I'm the only Mark in Korea on LinkedIn.
Okay. Mark in Korea. Okay.
Yeah. Mark in Korea is easy to find. And there's probably a good handful of Mark Pattons, because it's not that rare a name, but Mark in Korea. And so that's my portal right now to the rest of the world. Still haven't gotten around to building a website, but that will come. I do work with large companies, small companies. I also work with outside consultants who have something that needs to be done in Korea. And that's not a service I generally advertise, but it's actually about a third of my work is companies who have a global contract, but then they come up and say, oh, we have to facilitate this on the ground or facilitate this in Korean. And I'm quite versatile in handling that.
Okay. Oh, that's a great add-on. So, okay. So finding Mark Patton, Mark in Korea on LinkedIn, and we'll put a link there in the notes for the podcast as well. So again, Mark, I really appreciate you joining, just sharing a little perspective. It's always so fun to talk to people around the globe. And for me, talking to somebody in Korea is a real highlight. So I appreciate your time today. I also want to thank our audience for listening in to our conversation with Mark. Please reach out to him if he can be of service. He works a lot, obviously, in Korea with multinational companies. So if that's something that you could use some help with English speaking, but knows the culture and can work successfully with a variety of business entities there in Seoul and around the country, please give Mark a shout. So, okay. Thanks again for joining us. We just hope that you'll continue to join us for another episode of Leaders of Lasting Impact, as we look at how business consultants and advisors are helping small and mid-sized businesses around the globe. Thanks again. Bye.
Matt Pohl here. Thank you for watching this episode of Leaders of Lasting Impact. If you're a successful business advisor, I encourage you to go to leaders.rewildgroup.com, where you can learn how to be a guest on our show. If you enjoyed the episode, please share on social media. You can also tag people that you think might be a good guest for our show. Just be sure to use hashtag Leaders of Lasting Impact so we can see your comments and suggestions. We release episodes on a regular basis, so be sure to subscribe to our podcast. Finally, we really appreciate your ratings and reviews. Those go a long way with promoting our podcast. It really means a lot to me and our team. Learn more about the Rewild Group at rewildgroup.com, or you can follow us on LinkedIn. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.